630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
All right, second half just underway in Ottawa. It is 14-0 for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. The Blue Jays lost today 7-1 to Tampa Bay. Red Sox all over the Mets. It's 10-1 in the fifth, and the Yankees trail the Rangers 3-2 in the sixth. Duncan Keith will miss the first week in a little bit of Oilers training camp while in quarantine after coming back from the United States. He's expected to be on the ice for the first time next Friday. First on-ice sessions for the rest of the Oilers start tomorrow. Should also mention Ken Holland said today Chris Russell with a little bit of an issue, so he's going to miss probably a little bit here, maybe a couple of days at the start of camp. Chris Russell, defenseman, now wearing number 6 for the Edmonton Oilers, with Kevin Lowe's number 4 going to be retired on November 5th. We will go to the hotline, powered by CertainTeed, professional-grade building materials. Cam from the north side is on the line. Hi, Cam.
Hi. First time, long time. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's Cam Moon, everybody. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Boy, the Ottawa Red Blacks are having one heck of a time trying to move the ball tonight.
Well, we better beat them on Tuesday. I will just say that. I've said that a few times. I'm kind of watching. You know what I'm like? I got it with one eye here, so I haven't seen a bunch. But Ottawa, I mean, even when Ottawa beat Edmonton, they didn't move the ball. They got a defensive touchdown, and Edmonton couldn't finish in that game. And I assume the weather has not helped either team.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, it's pouring rain there. Ottawa's hard-pressed to get a first down, and Hamilton's been, better, but, not a lot better, but they're getting some points, and, it's tough going. I had to put a baseball game on now because I don't know if I can watch Ottawa do that anymore.
All right. Did you watch the baseball this afternoon? I know it was a tough day for the Blue Jays, and they tried to get a little bit of revenge against this dude that took the strategy card. What happened here?
Yeah, I didn't get to see it, but I understand that they weren't very happy about the card that came out of Alejandro Kirk's. They have on the wristband last night. It's just basically showing what the Jays are looking to do as far as pitching goes, just kind of what the game plan is. And that got picked up, and the Jays weren't happy about it, apparently. And I guess a couple of guys got plunked or whatever. And I think they threw Ryan Barucki out of the game or whatever. So I don't know. It was a mess. Hopefully the Jays, get into the wild card, win the wild card game, and then play Tampa Bay in the first round, because it looks like that could be really exciting.
Okay, well, apparently I was gone for a second. Now I'm back, yeah?
Well, good. I was wondering what happened.
Well, I was talking, and then Kellen said you're not there. So I am back now. I said I was connected to the station. Sorry about that, everybody. Sometimes we get a little glitch here with the good old internet that we're broadcasting through. I don't think I'd ever seen that before. A player taking, a piece of strategy away from another player, or that fell out of his equipment.
Yeah. It's not something you'd normally see, that's for sure. So Kiermaier, he got hit by the pitch then today. I know he had said, I had read it on MLB.com earlier, that when he saw it on the ground last night, he thought maybe that was the card from his pocket. Because a lot of times, the players will have in their pocket kind of how they're going to set up to pitch to a guy. So that is going to influence the way the defenders are going to be situated on the field. So initially he thought it was his, or so he said, and he just put it in his pocket and then realized it wasn't. And they figured that was that. And I know the managers had talked about it before the game today. So it looked like it was all good, and then it wasn't. So yeah, that's, it'd be great if those two teams hooked up in the playoffs. I think it'd be wonderful.
Okay, well, we'll try this again. Usually this doesn't happen, that we play a commercial every time Cam Moon finishes a sentence. But sorry for this, guys. I've been at home for about a year and a half, and I think that's the first time that I ever got kicked off the connection, and it happened twice in 3 minutes. So sorry about that. I guess we just got to laugh at it a little bit. What are we going to do, Mooner? But that's our
goal. I think it's me. It might be me. Is it me? Is it me? You'd tell me if it was me, wouldn't you?
No, you are a blessing, not a curse, my friend. So don't think that it's you.
Starting to wonder.
All right. But sorry about that for Mooner and everybody tuning in tonight. I think maybe some issues with my computer. I should get rid of the VIC-20 and upgrade to a Commodore 64. That's really the problem.
Yeah, and get those old the old floppy disks. And you remember the modem where the phone would actually sit right in that cradle? Yeah, something like that.
All right. Okay. Well, if we get knocked off again, just phone me and I'll do the rest of the show over the phone, so this doesn't keep happening. Mooner, down at camp today. Look, we've gone over the Keith and Archibald news. Obviously, we've covered those headlines. Hyman and Fogel came out today. Two potentially very important pieces for the Oilers up front, because what have they wanted? Another top six guy to play with McDavid and or Draisaitl, and what have they wanted on the third line? Maybe a little bit more, well, not maybe, a little bit more speed, a little bit more net drive, and a little bit more finish. So fair to say those are the hopes for those gentlemen?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Warren Fogle's going to be expected to win battles and you know, provide a big, strong presence on likely the third line, and to be able to chip in offensively somewhat, which he's done for sure. I mean, double-digit goals the last 3 years, and I think he can do that. And that's a role that he's carved out with the Carolina Hurricanes, and I think it's a role he can do very well with the Edmonton Oilers. So it gives Oilers, you know, depth in their bottom six, and who knows, could work himself up higher in the lineup. I mean, I'm not going to limit him by in any way. And Zach Hyman is a guy that's expected to be in the top six and to provide some offense, which he's most certainly done, but also provide that energy that he brings. That's the thing that I haven't watched Warren Fogle play a lot, so my opinion of him, I don't really have one yet until I get to see him. But Zach Hyman's a guy we got to watch quite a bit last year. And his pursuit of the puck, whether it be in the corner or from the opposition, even in open ice, he gets after it. And I love watching that. And that's what I initially is something that I was like, wow, like this guy, he's tough to deal with. And that's what he's going to bring. I was really impressed with his ability to speak today. It was obvious, but he showed like genuine, he signed a long-term deal, but he just showed that he is genuinely fired up and excited to be a part of the Edmonton Oilers. And for a guy that grew up in Toronto and had played his entire NHL career in Toronto to come out to Edmonton, I love to see it. Just he was pretty fired up about being here, and that gives me great optimism going into the season for sure.
Yeah, he has an interesting story, and he talked about it today. He has always lived in Toronto, except for when he played NCAA hockey at Michigan. Grew up in Toronto, played for the Maple Leafs, so a change for him. He mentioned his wife had never been to Edmonton at all, so when the Oilers became a very strong option for him, and basically when he knew it wasn't going to work out with the Leafs, he identified Edmonton as a place he'd like to play, and the Oilers identified him as a player they wanted. So it worked out quite well. But he brought his wife out here. They looked at some neighborhoods. She, got to know the community a little bit, and now here they are. So we'll see where it goes for him. Give me one. I'll ask you kind of a general one or two storylines. We talked about Fogle and Hyman. So besides them, one or two storylines or players that you're going to kind of have an extra eye on as we move through camp here.
Well, on the looking at the Oilers, fourth line, and then whichever extra forwards are going to stay with the team and be on that 23-man roster. To me, that's really interesting to see if all the work Kyle Turris has done in the summer, how's that helped him? Does that give him kind of a step ahead of the others? What's Ryan McLeod going to look like after last year's extended time with the team? And he fit in pretty well and skated real well, just didn't put up any points. Well, can he take that next step? How does he fit in there? How's Tyler Benson look? Like, is he ready to now start in the National Hockey League? That's going to be interesting. And so kind of I'm lumping that all together as how the bottom five forwards are going to look. I'm trying to look the fourth line and then say if there's two extras. And then Evan Bouchard. I just can't wait to see Evan Bouchard getting what we would believe to be more opportunity and how he does in that. I think he's going to do real well, and I want to see him do real well. So that part I'm going to be keeping a real close eye on too.
Yeah, Bouchard will be interesting to watch, and I think he's going to speak to the media after practice tomorrow morning because he was in the NHL last season. He was on the team. I don't think anybody, probably even Ken Holland and Dave Tippett included, saw him as much as they would have liked, but just the circumstances of the season kind of led to him, not playing a ton. Tyson Barrie is going to be the right shot guy on the power play this season. 2-3 years down the road, they want that guy to be Bouchard.
Yeah, exactly. And I wouldn't doubt if he still gets some power play time anyway this year. Not a lot. You'd think Tyson Barrie get the bulk of it, but I think he'll still get some looks there too. So that's good. And I look forward just to seeing how he progresses over the start of the year, from where he is at the beginning to where he's going to be, at Christmas, and where he's going to be at the end. And I think that there's a lot of things to be excited about his game. The fact that he doesn't panic with the puck, that he's got that great shot, and he's just going to get more opportunity. And he's able to get in 14 games last year, but also practicing at the NHL level the entire year, all that stuff. So, yeah, I think that part's going to be very exciting. I can't wait till, once Duncan Keith gets on the ice, see how he fits into the mix, all of that. Like, it's an exciting time to be alive, Reed. Like, we got hockey starting. This is a beautiful thing. And preseason will be upon us in no time at all. It's a wonderful time of year, Reed. Wonderful.
And you're doing the game Sunday, are you not? Are you going to Calgary? Or is that Jack? Yeah. No, that's you.
Yeah, Jack and I are going to... Well, this was the plan anyway, last I heard. We were going to split the preseason games, and I'm going to do the Calgary and Winnipeg ones. He's going to do the Seattle and Vancouver.
All right. Well, we look forward to that. Of course, I will see you at the rink tomorrow, as we'll see what comes up story-wise for the Oilers. I'll let you get back to your sports viewing, Mooner. Thanks for checking in tonight. Sorry about the glitches earlier.
Hey, no problem. Go Dodgers tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
There we go. Cam Moon, play-by-play voice. He and Jack Michaels for Oilers games here on 630 Ched. Now 21-0. Hamilton taking it to Ottawa in the CFL. They are halfway through the third quarter. Quick timeout. It's Inside Sports on Ched. I love having James H. Brown on board as the title sponsor for Inside Sports. Trent Brown, the former member of the Double E football team, has joined us a few times throughout the year. Of course, he's with James H. Brown and was a really good player during the course of his CFL career. Thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. Yeah, we are counting down to actual hockey on these airwaves again. Sunday night face-off show at 5:30. It'll be Cam and Bob with the call. Rob Brown and I will once again be... bringing you overtime open line and the face-off show before the game. So, as Mooner said, it's an exciting time to be alive. And, I had somebody write in earlier and say, less COVID talk, more sports talk. I hear you. The COVID talk affects every part of life, and it's obviously affecting some storylines in the NHL and in the world of sports and how rosters are going to look. So we got to touch on that. But for the most part, I hope that this show brings you joy. If not joy, at least we'll get a drone to drop a canned ham on your lawn. How does that sound? Does Amazon, does it actually use drones to deliver packages? Does that actually happen, Kellen, or was that an urban myth?
No, they do in some cities. I'm not sure about here or not. You know, text in if you've had a package delivered via drone in Edmonton, but I know elsewhere they have, so.
Well, we could deliver canned hams by drone. I don't see why we couldn't. Besides the fact that we don't own a drone.
I mean, they're starting to get cheap enough, so.
Other than that, everything, our plan is coming together. All right. Anyway, Zach Hyman's plan is coming together. He wanted to play for the Edmonton Oilers. He's here. He knows what it's like playing with high-end guys. He commented on that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to get asked this a lot. The Austin, Connor, you know, Johnny. But obviously in my career, I've been fortunate to play with some really talented players. And what I've learned is that each player is really unique and they each have a very, very unique skill set. Austin was a lot different than John, and both of them are a lot different than Connor. And I've only played against Connor. I haven't had the chance to play with him in an actual game. We've practiced here in the scrimmages and whatnot, but it's not real hockey yet. And it's going to get real pretty soon. So I'm excited to kind of learn his tendencies and see what it's like to be on his team.
That is Zach Hyman. Can also tell you that former Edmonton Oiler Alex Chiasson, a professional tryout contract with the Vancouver Canucks. Chiasson, 30 years of age, last three seasons here in Edmonton, had 16 points, nine of them goals in 45 regular season games last season. Also, Buffalo agreeing to a contract with defenseman Rasmus Dahlin, three-year deal worth $18 million, 107 points in 197 games since the Buffalo Sabres took him first overall in 2018. Oh, remember this guy, Peter Chiarelli, promoted to vice president of hockey operations with the St. Louis Blues, and Ken Hitchcock, former Oilers coach for that brief tenure a few years ago. He is back with the Blues, joining them as a consultant. Pat Steinberg, my good buddy, up next, Inside Sports on Chet. Minutes left in the third quarter. Hamilton leading Ottawa 21-0. Wednesday game in the CFL. Two games coming up on Friday. Montreal at Toronto, Saskatchewan at BC. Just three games this week. Week 8. Week 9 will start on Tuesday. Edmonton at Ottawa. That game will be Kissin' Country 103.9. To broadcast that one with Morley and Dave and Blake and Eddie, we will have an Oilers preseason game that night, the second one of the Oilers preseason. The first one is Saturday, and that is the Edmonton Oilers at the Calgary Flames, 5:30 faceoff show, 7 o'clock for the drop of the puck. The Tuesday home game is against the Seattle Kraken. Well, we were touching on some of the big Oilers storylines today. Duncan Keith quarantining after traveling to the United States. And he will be fully vaccinated and available next Friday. Josh Archibald, the one unvaccinated Oiler. And as Ken Holland indicated today, it sounds like the number of unvaccinated players in the NHL is a single digit. We know that Tyler Bertuzzi is one of them. Now, this will affect how Josh Archibald will or will not be able to participate in several games throughout the course of the season. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's go to Calgary from Sportsnet 960. The host of the Flames broadcast and my good friend Pat Steinberg is on the line. Good evening, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm well, Reed. I have an important question to ask. Not only will the when will the Ottawa Red Blacks win another football game, or when will the Ottawa Red Blacks score another offensive point? This is painful. This might be the worst CFL team in decades. They are awful.
Well, I got to be careful about mocking them because you know who their one win is against this season.
I know. It's been an up and down year for the newly rebranded Edmonton team, but that was week one. of a year with no preseason. I'm sorry, 2-4. The Ottawa Redblacks might as well be 1-900 because that's the only win they're. I can't. When are they winning another game? Let's talk hockey.
Well, they'll win. They were on the verge of falling behind against the Elks, and they got a 100-something yard interception return for a touchdown.
Exactly.
But it was enough to win. They are not good. Hamilton's been a little up and down themselves, but they're clearly in control here. Okay, Pat, thanks for coming on the show. We have the COVID vaccination angle here in Edmonton with Josh Archibald. I understand there is one concerning the Calgary Flames as well, though perhaps not with a player who was expected to be on their roster this season. Or was he? What's going on there?
Well, so that's kind of what the assumption is. The Flames aren't saying. They're deciding not to confirm one way or the other. It's 2016 second round pick Tyler Parsons, who is a gold medalist with Team USA at that World Juniors, that crazy shootout between Canada and the USA. He was the U.S. goaltender, former teammate of Matthew Tkachuk with the London Knights. And what the Flames are saying is that he was not able to meet quarantine protocol rules to enter the country. And knowing Tyler Bertuzzi, Zach Rinaldo, Josh Archibald, so on and so forth, most people are assuming that he is not vaccinated. Flames aren't confirming, but I think that's a safe assumption when it comes to Parsons. Not the same as Archibald. Archibald is a pretty, as you and anyone listening would well know, it's a pretty, you know, pretty useful player on this Oilers team. He plays a pretty important role. Tyler Parsons, his time in the organization is kind of teetering. They qualified him this year as a restricted free agent more so they could meet expansion exposure requirements than anything else. So I don't know if this is going to spell the end of his time in Calgary. I kind of feel like his time in Calgary was kind of knocking on the door to be up anyways. But yes, he is the player in Calgary that is not here and not on the training camp roster for non-injury reasons is how we'll put it.
All right. So a storyline to follow there. Forgive me if I've missed something here. Do the Flames have a captain right now? Are they going to name one? What's going on?
They do not have one right now. I asked General Manager Brad Treliving that question today when he met the media, much like Ken Holland did in your city with the Oilers. And he said they're going to kind of play it by ear, see what evolves organically in training camp. Now, my belief is, my gut is that they will name a captain because that's what this Flames organization has kind of done in the past. They've always been an organization that seems to want to have somebody wearing that C. You know, even in the 1990s and into the early 2000s, before Jerome Iginla was named captain, they seem to always have one. Like Bob Bugner or Todd Simpson or Craig Conroy or whoever you wanted to point to, there was always somebody wearing that captain C, even if there wasn't like a franchise player or a natural guy that's 100% the captain. So I think they will name a captain before they open the regular season at Rogers Place on October 16th. But it's kind of my belief that I think there's plenty to, or there's plenty of reason to wait, go a season without a captain, because they went without a captain for 20 games when Jerome Iginla was traded to Pittsburgh in March or April of 2013. There was about 20 games between then and the end of the season. They didn't have a captain. The following season, they named Mark Giordano the captain, and he's been the captain for the better part of the last decade, and now obviously is no longer with the team. But Mark Giordano was this obvious choice. He was the guy that just made perfect sense. It wasn't even close. Like, this guy with his story, his work ethic, the way he goes about his business, all of it is like, oh, yeah, well, Mark Giordano, he's the natural next captain. Whereas I don't see anybody right now that you're like, well, that guy is the next guy. And we had a big conversation about this on our show down here, Reed. It was like, okay, maybe you let it go a year and let it kind of present itself organically, whether it's Chris Tanev or Elias Lindholm or Matthew Tkachuk or whoever you want to point to, Milan Lucic. any one of these guys you could make an argument for right now, and it would be an okay argument, but it's not a convincing 100% he needs to be the captain argument. Whereas, see what happens over 82 games, maybe more this year, and then you've got a little bit more evidence, a little bit more to suggest that, yes, that guy should be the guy. So as of right now, they do not have a captain. I think that's going to be a storyline here as we move through training camp, and we'll see. My gut says they will have one by October 16th, and we'll see if my gut ends up being proved right on that one.
All right. So, Pat, both the Oilers and the Flames wound up with seasons that everybody wanted to go better. The Flames did not make the postseason. The Oilers did not win a postseason game despite having made the playoffs. I think the storyline here in Edmonton is they should once again be a pretty good regular season team, and then perhaps this core of players and the work of Holland and Tippett will ultimately be judged by how they perform in the postseason. Mm-hmm. What are the expectations or the hopes there in Calgary? Is it okay, well, you know, they should have been in last year and they will get in, or man oh man, are they good enough to get back in? Like, I'm wondering kind of what the general vibe is there, or what you think.
Well, it depends who you're talking to, and it kind of depends on it depends who you ask. Like, if you ask organizationally, and if you ask, you know, the GM, front office, coaching staff, they believe that the team underachieved last year is a good team that just didn't get it done. So they believe that with very minimal change, I mean, we're talking about Giordano out, Tolman in, and then some interchangeable parts, new players, but some interchangeable parts in their bottom six forwards, bottom pairing defense. So they have not made any massive, massive changes in that regard. So the hope is that essentially running back the same group, specifically at forward, will yield better results, and they'll be able to perform to expectation as opposed to below expectation, which is what the organization believed happened last year. And they may very well be right, because I think we all believe the Flames, even you, when we talk, we believe the Flames and the Oilers were going to be playoff teams last year. Turns out that's not the way it went. Now, on the outside, when it comes to fans in this city, I think it's a different story. I think that there's a lot of uncertainty. I think that fans are kind of just like, I don't know what to expect this year. I think there's a lot of cynicism, and there's a lot of skepticism, and I think there's a lot of people bracing themselves for a tough 82 games. The one saving grace the Flames have, and what I think a lot of Flames fans, even if they are slightly skeptical, believe, is that this team might end up being a little bit better standings-wise than they would be in other divisions, because the Pacific Division is pretty wide open right now. Like, if we all consider Vegas to be the number one team, and I think that's fair, and I think that there are plenty of people, and for good reason, who believe Edmonton will be one of the three playoff teams or potentially four playoff teams from the division. Okay, well, but then let's say that that's true. Let's say it's Vegas and Edmonton 1-2. Well, then there, I don't see a whole lot separating Vancouver, especially if they sign their two big guns, Vancouver, Seattle, Calgary. You probably throw in, I think Los Angeles has taken some steps forward. So there's not a lot separating like four teams fighting for one or two other spots if we consider Edmonton one of the playoff teams. And I even think, you know, depending on the way things go for the Oilers, if it's a tough year in net, like maybe they're a little bit further down in the pack. So I think that's kind of the saving grace for the Flames. And I think that's the saving grace a lot of Flames fans are falling back on is, you know, maybe this team can be competitive in a Pacific division that's kind of meh, and they can be helped out in that regard. We'll wait and see, but I can understand that, because I certainly don't look at the Pacific division as a powerhouse division coming into the year, that's for sure.
Well, I was on a podcast the other day and got asked about the division, and I said I do think it'll be Vegas and Edmonton in the first two slots, and I picked Calgary third. And you touched on it, goaltending. It's almost everything. It's almost too much of hockey sometimes, yeah. Right? When you look at the impact it can have. Markstrom last year was a .904 save percentage, and that's really his worst career save percentage in a season in which he's been a number one goalie. Like, I know he had okay, he had an 868, but he only played four games for Vancouver that season. He had a 901 for Florida. He only played 23 games. If he's up to a 912 like he was 2 years ago, or a 918, which he was in 1920, especially if he's a 918, that could change everything. That could be seven extra wins, you know. I mean, not from last year, but extrapolated over the 82 games. I mean, that could be a win or two a month, and that's often the difference between playoffs or not playoffs.
Well, and the thing with Markstrom is that, you know, he had the 904 is not good, and the year that he had as a whole was not good enough for the six-year, $36 million contract the Flames signed him to. Now, in saying that, if you break it down a little bit more than just the however many games he ended up playing, 43 or whatever it was, it's actually kind of a tale of three seasons. It was an outstanding start where he was in the 920 range to start the season through his first 15 starts. Then he got in that collision with Tanner Pearson of the Canucks and was concussed in that collision. So after the concussion, played that one game in Edmonton where the Oilers put up six or seven goals and lit him up, and then didn't play for about 3 weeks. Upon returning after those 2 or 3 weeks, he was significantly worse than the first 15 games where people were talking about this guy's slam dunk signing. And that lasted for about 16, 17 starts. And in those 16, 17 starts, like, we're talking about him in the, if I remember correctly from the numbers I crunched, like in the 888, like low 880 range in terms of his save percentage, which just sewered his stats. And that was like, it sewered the team. Like, it was a huge reason why they fell off. So when you have that, and then he bounced back at the end, and his final 15 starts, he was back to like 918, 919. So he showed that he can be a top-end goaltender in stretches, but he had that awful middle. And if you point to the middle and say that's only injury-related, and if that ends up being correct, then the Flames probably have a pretty good goaltender this year. If it was something else, if he struggles with consistency this year, well, they're probably in trouble. And they've got a very unknown quantity behind Markstrom in their new acquisition, Dan Vladar from Boston. And a lot of people think there's a lot of potential with this young man, but played like four or five NHL games in his life, so we don't know exactly what he is as a full-time NHLer. So I think Markstrom is one of the two, three biggest keys. If it's me, my gut, I think he bounces back. I think Markstrom has a much better, much more consistent season than he did last year, because I think he's a high-end goalie. I really do. But if he doesn't, there's no doubt about it. The Flames are going to be in significant trouble this year.
All right, so just to clarify, it's out of all the intelligent things you said, this is what I follow up on. It's Vladar, not Vlader. So we can't go with Darth Vlader. It's Vladar.
It's not Vlader. It's either Vladar or Vladar. It's one of the two.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm not 100% okay. Sure yet on that one. Vladar rolls off the tongue for me easy, but it's not Dan Vlader, so it can't be Darth Vader.
Oh, that's sad. Before I let you go, we started with CFL. Let's end there. Calgary bounced back from the Labor Day loss with a win in Edmonton, and then they weren't very good against Hamilton, including BLM, who was pretty good in the second half against the Elks. Like, who are the Stamps? Like, they've gone from me thinking, oh, there's the old Stampeders, to me thinking, are they one of the worst teams in the league now? Give me 40 seconds on them.
They are an enigma. The biggest worry is Bo Levi Mitchell. He does not look right. I don't know if he's still injured. I don't know if that is still hampering his performance, but he looks uncomfortable. He does not look like he trusts his receivers. He does not look like he trusts his offensive line, and he doesn't look like he is feeling comfortable in the scheme. And if you're talking about your franchise player looking that below what he needs to be and what we're used to from him, that's worrying. Defense has some really good things. There are some promising performances, Josh Huff, Kamar Jordan on offense, but it all comes down to Bo. He's got to be a whole lot closer to the MOP form that we've seen from him. And so far in four starts this year, it hasn't been there consistently enough. So that's it. That's what it all comes down to for me, Reed, is Bo going to get back to the Bo that we've seen in years past?
All right. Hey, Pat, I always appreciate when you make time for old Wilkie here on Inside Sports. Enjoy training camp. I know we'll talk soon.
I would like to hang out in Kissin' Country with you.
The radio station, I hope.
The radio station. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. It's good we got the clarity. That is Pat Steinberg. He's going to Kissin' Country. We're going to commercial on Inside Sports. I want to let you know another cool thing here for the Edmonton Stingers, the two-time champions in the Canadian Elite Basketball League. They will represent Canada in the upcoming season of the Basketball Champions League Americas. 12 teams in total from across the Americas. It'll start in December and end in April. Now, the CEBL and the Stingers are going to give details on when and where Canada will host its group stage later in the year. Makes sense to me that it should be in Edmonton, but I guess we'll find out for sure later on. Hey, thanks for listening tonight. Thanks to everybody who called in and texted. Always appreciate you. You heard from Cam Moon and Pat Steinberg. We had some comments from Ken Holland and Zach Hyman. And you miss anything, get the latest on Duncan Keith and Josh Archibald and Alex Stalock on the website, 630ched.com. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Take care.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.